After new sanctions on Iran, where is the off-ramp from escalation? In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. President Donald Trump announced new economic sanctions against Iran yesterday. It's the latest move in a circle of escalation that's included explosions on oil tankers in the Strait of Hormuz, which the U.S. says is Iran's doing, and Iran's shooting down of an American drone. These most recent White House orders come on top of sanctions this spring that restricted Iranian oil exports. Robbie Grammer is a diplomacy and national security reporter at Foreign Policy and joins us. Good morning.
Good morning.
All right. The new sanctions, what specifically do they do?
Well, the new sanctions that the Trump administration announced yesterday target the Iranian supreme leader and other key members of the Iranian government. They go after all of the financial assets of the Iranian leadership. But given how heavily sanctioned Iran already is, will these sanctions actually matter?
Right. Because at this point, it's not like the supreme leader has a deposit account at Citibank or something.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like he has an account at Bank of America right now. Given this administration's withdrawal from the 2015 Iran nuclear deal that eased sanctions in exchange for Iran dismantling its nuclear weapons program, you know, some analysts are questioning the administration's assertions that this, you know, is a real significant step. But it's also important to remember that sanctions are one of the only levers the Trump administration has to ratchet up pressure on Iran, short of anything having to do with the military.
Europe still wants the nuclear deal to work. How did these new sanctions affect that effort?
Well, the Iran nuclear deal that Europe is upholding right now seems to be hanging by a thread because, you know, the whole gist of the deal was economic relief, easing of sanctions in exchange for, you know, starting to dismantle your nuclear program. But since the United States withdrew from it, a lot of the companies, European companies and businesses that might otherwise do business in Iran are very worried that they could face U.S. reprisal for doing that. So right now, the strategy that both Europe and Iran seem to be taking is hunker down and wait to see if the Trump administration, you know, is a one-term administration, whether they can survive and wait out and see if a new president, a Democratic president, can re-enter the deal when they come back in. But it's not clear how long that strategy can last, particularly given all the rise in tensions in the region after the shooting down of the drone and the alleged attacks on the tankers.
Europe was developing a payment system called Instex to get around U.S. sanctions. It was a way to make payments to Iran for trade that gets around U.S.-controlled banks. Is that still an option right now? Can that mitigate these sanctions, new ones?
At this point, it looks like it's an option on paper, but in practice, no companies really want to enter into that because, you know, the U.S. and European economies are so interconnected that if a European company tries to do business in Iran, tries to invest in Iran through Instex, you know, they have holdings in the United States, and the Trump administration has indicated it's not willing to play ball with Instex.
Robbie Grammer is a diplomacy and national security reporter at Foreign Policy. It was great to talk to you.
Hey, thanks so much.
Let's do the numbers. The FTSE in London is down 0.3%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are also down in the 1-3% range, with the Dow future down 35 points.
Part of being a responsible news organization, especially one that covers business and the economy, is fiscal responsibility. Marketplace's budget year ends on June 30th, and we're closing in on our goal of 2,500 donors for this drive. But we still need to hear from you. Become a Marketplace investor for as little as $5 and keep trustworthy, independent news going strong. Contribute today at marketplace.org, and thank you.
Later this morning, the Census Bureau will report on new home sales for the month of May. We already know existing home sales rose in that month, maybe due to falling mortgage rates. But this is just a snapshot of what's happening in the housing market. Harvard University's Joint Center for Housing Studies has a look at the big picture. And to sum it up, the U.S. housing market is out of whack. Amy Scott took a look and has a story.
One big takeaway from this year's report, the U.S. is not building enough housing. Chris Herbert is managing director of Harvard's Joint Center for Housing Studies. He says more than a decade after the bust,
we're still only building 1.2 million new homes a year.
That's barely keeping up with new households.
It sounds like we should be in balance, but when you consider the fact that each year we tear down a bunch of housing that's old,
or that lots of people have or want second homes, and some slack for population shifts and normal vacancies is healthy,
we should be producing about 1.5 or 1.6 million homes a year.
So why isn't that happening? Materials and land cost more, and it's harder to find workers. Danushka Nanayakara-Skillington is a forecaster with the National Association of Home Builders. She says many left the industry during the downturn and never came back.
And at the same time, younger people are not interested in working in a construction trade.
Neither are women, who account for only 9% of construction workers.
And finally, the immigration crackdown has also choked off new labor supply.
The shortage of new housing is part of what's pushing up prices for housing in general. And when new homes are built, they tend to be at the higher, more profitable end of the market. Construction of rental housing has been stronger, but Chris Herbert says,
rents are continuing to rise faster than income, so that means that people who are working out there with full-time jobs making decent living are struggling to find housing that they can afford.
Affordable is typically defined as costing no more than 30% of your income. The report found that almost half of renters are spending more than that. African American and Hispanic renters are more likely to be in that bind. Linda Couch is vice president for housing policy with Leading Age, which represents nonprofit providers of senior housing. She says rent is eating up the budgets of more older adults, too, leaving little for other necessities.
The lowest income older adults who are spending the most of their income for rent are spending 44% less on food and 70% less on health care.
The solution, advocates say, is no surprise. More housing, but especially at the lower end. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
And I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.